One of my all-time favorite songs, and one that I know all of you are familiar with, is John Lennon's song Blackbird. When I was trying to learn the guitar, it was the one song I really wanted to learn to play. And I think you all know the words, but I will remind you of them. It is Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you've been only waiting for this moment to arise. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you've been waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. I want to talk about the pandemic we're all part of, and we can see the pandemic in so many ways. Our fear sees it as a personal inconvenience, as an economic destruction, as a threat of loss we can hardly imagine. And that's very real. But what it also is an opportunity. In terms of our practice, this is the moment we've been practicing for. To see things as they actually are and respond accordingly. I've been reflecting, it's so easy to forget that we live in bodies and we're subject to the nature of bodies. I see in myself a long-standing habit to sort of override my body and just expect it to do whatever I decide I need to do in any particular day. I expect it to come along and I feel inconvenienced if it is sick or headachy or not available. And in this way, we tend to see old age, sickness, and death as an anomaly, something that is inconvenient and to be feared instead of what it is, a part of life. We as a culture, we've lost track of the fact that we live on a planet and are part of and subject to natural ecosystem. We see the events of nature that inconvenience, like a storm or changing coastlines or the earthquake that just happened the other day, as an aberration, something we try to control. And it's easy to lose track of the fact that we live in a natural ecosystem in our homes, in our shopping malls, and in our cars. But this reminds us that we cannot separate ourselves from the world of nature that we live in. This pandemic also acts as a sort of truth. I see how much of what I've been psychologically wrapped up in on a day-to-day level, what's been dominating my thoughts and emotions during an average day is pretty superficial. It's unimportant. It's small potatoes, really, in the awesome backdrop of life. And this experience has cleared out the rubbish, and it can bring us back to what's truly important in our lives. I know we're all experiencing that. The first noble truth that life includes old age, illness, and death, not as an inconvenient or to be complained about, but as an intrinsic part, clarifies our sight and our emotions. Right now, as we're feeling so acutely the impermanence, knowing that we can lose what is dear to us makes everything so beautiful and precious. Just as it is. For myself, personally, I've not had a close relationship with my mother over the years. It's hard to connect to her. And she is 92 and she's living in a vulnerable population. Right now, she's locked in her building, and I am calling her every day to know her that to let her know that my heart is right next to hers, and the understanding that I might not see her again. And I will not be able to be with her by her side should she sicken, has brought a truth to the foreground that I love her and I want her well-being above all things. And our differences are the rubbish that's been cleared away. So I'm so grateful for that. So, part of this practice is understanding the huge degree that we are wrapped inside of our ego-centered thinking. And the insight path isn't about fixing this, but just seeing it more clearly, more deeply, with compassion. You know, this crisis is such a powerful impetus in clearing our vision and understanding, should we choose to use it this way. You know, the precepts of living with non-harm make our acts of distancing and carefulness for ourselves and each other, these are acts of deliberate kindness and compassion. So, you know, we can fret and worry and complain through this, and we can choose to demonstrate our practice. So when we wash our hands and we distance, we can be done through fear, or can be done through kindness. When we reach out and we're keeping in touch, bringing our relationships back to their most fundamental level of love, and we letting go of the petty differences, that's equanimity. Our loyalty to our practice, not shielding ourselves to the fundamental truths of how things are right now or how life is, it's not in the control of the small self. Loyalty to that brings freedom. A week ago Friday, Mark did an online teaching for us in lieu of his visit, and he said a couple of things that really touched me. He said, it is possible to be in the present moment as long as we don't expect it to make us happy. And he also said that happiness is not dependent on happiness. And as I took it by this, is that there is a deep well-being, a calmness and a fulfillment in presence, in showing up, in non-resistance. So we can and will meet this experience. There is freedom in knowing that our true nature, our depths of being, what we just open to in our practice, has all we need to meet this experience. And it also points to the fact that from the ego's point of view, which is the separate self that needs life to be smooth, predictable, and safe in order to have happiness, is just the ego's point of view. You know, the truth is that when awareness is a conscious presence in our lives, that presence itself brings a knowledge of the completeness of every moment. And there is an aliveness, a contentment to experiencing this embodiment that's independent of any circumstance. And that freedom, as the Buddha tells us, is unshakable. You know, when I was in my 20s, one of my first encounters with the spiritual yearning was through the works of Carlos Castaneda in the 1970s with his work with Don Juan Matas, a Sonoran Indian. Many of you may have read his initial books. And Don Juan talked about death being the greatest advisor, that when you see your life through the eyes of death, you see everything rightly. And that's been on my mind a lot lately. He also talked about, in times when the Aztecs were being invaded and slaughtered by the Spanish, that the Aztec warriors found heights of awakening and freedom as they faced the battle and the prospect of almost certain annihilation. Now that may seem a bit extreme to us. It's like, oh my gosh. It seems a bit gruesome, but in stories and memes in our culture, there's the same idea of meeting a battle or a danger with kind of a sense of inner exaltation of the joy of facing a circumstance that tests our training and our preparedness, and to be not conquered by any outcome, that we come to this with a joy that's independent of outcome or circumstance. This doesn't mean that we push away from fear, from sadness, and from loss. These things are going to be present. But when they are present, we experience them in an embodied way, the way that we've been training for all these years. When we experience them in the body, in the present, and with presence, and we abandon mental proliferation about the what ifs and the oh my God, that are trying to take us away from the experience. That's how we experience them, each one as an honored guest, as a guide from the beyond. I'm on a 2-month retreat with Adya Shanti, and we're just in our second week right now, and I just want to paraphrase something he said last week about practice. He said that practice does not mean that we should resist or fight against any emotions or thoughts. That's a waste of time or energy. He pointed out that you are not generating the thoughts or emotions to begin with, so you can't really turn them off at will. And so we don't do battle or fight with our emotions or our feelings. We simply give attention to something that is deeper and more fundamental in ourselves. So that's what I mean when painful feelings arise, or really when anything arises. We treat each one as our honored guest, as Rumi says, as our guide from the beyond. And in this way, we invite them to take all the space they need to be whatever size they are. We surrender and attend to our feelings without resistance. In this way, they can digest and inform us. You know, in the news over the last week, I was struck by there was some reference in various daily briefings to taking on this crisis on a war footing, sort of like the all-out national mobilization that happened during World War II. And I thought, yeah, this is a time for community-based warriorship and spiritual warriorship. It's really our opportunity to put it all on the line, holding nothing back. And I'm grateful that the practice of the Eightfold Path has built a depth, it's built a foundation and an open heart. So this is the time to shine with compassion, with courage, and not turning away from difficult truths. You know, responding with Vipassana means responding with deeper, clearer seeing. That takes some grit, you know, and this, and I think only that, is the effective response to whatever is in the future. I'm also thinking about the last lines of the Metta Sutta, which says, "The pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision and not being fixed in her views, is not born again into this world." And that "not born again" does not refer to physical death, but psychologically moving out of the world of the small separated self and being born into the universe of our true and deeper nature. So, my dear ones, we have a really rough ride ahead of us. It's the opportunity of a lifetime, uncharted territory. So I'm suggesting that we don't just get through this, but this is what we've been practicing for, to be a light to ourselves and to those around us. So all me and all my fellow Blackburns, let's take our broken wings and learn to fly. Thank you. My love to everyone.